This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. I'm in my son-in-law's car today. I should say my daughter in son-in-law's car. It's an old Toyota Avalon. It's a great car. My car is having a little trouble. So we were going so good. We were going good. You know, I took it in and they said, oh, it's probably the battery. They didn't find anything else wrong. But that didn't make any sense because there was some other things wrong. So they put a new battery in it, and I think I drove it for a week. Last Friday, I drove it around, did the costume thing. Great. Got it home. Everything was fine. It had been shifting fine. No problems. I was like, well, who knows? Maybe that was the thing. And then I got changed out of my costume, came back out into the garage. I was going to move the car so that I could unload the groceries, and it was dead. It was dead flat dead. I mean, the lights would come on, but there was no tick. There was no nothing. It was dead. D-E-D dead. So I put it on the charger, got it charged back up, and it was fine. So obviously I got some kind of alternator problem. And so I called the mechanic and said, I think we got an alternator problem, which would actually be better possibly, because I wasn't getting any lights, but if it's some kind of voltage sensor, you know, something gone wrong there, it means we might have fluctuating voltage, and if we have fluctuating voltage, that might account for the transmission problem, which maybe means I can drive that car until the cyber cabs get here. So, you know, there's developments. I had mentioned, I think, last week to finish up with that, the car is going in a week from tomorrow into the mechanic, and they're going to try to see if there's some kind of alternator problem. And then we'll go from there. In the meantime, my son-in-law has a car. It's an older Toyota Avalon that has, I don't know, 325,000 miles on it. Runs like a top. It's such a good car. And it actually belonged to Billy Burris, who was the pastor, two pastors before Alan. There was Billy Burris and then Ken Fent and then my son-in-law. And Pastor Burris sold this car to Alan, so it's a preacher's car. So, you know, got to keep it all in the family there. So they have this one, and they just kind of keep it running every once in a while because they're driving Teslas. So they immediately said, hey, if you need to borrow a car, you can borrow the Avalon. So I was like, okay, which I'm going to use it to go get my grandson on Tuesdays for sure, because it's a little more solid and stable than my preacher car, the Lincoln Continental. So that would make my grandson a little less nervous with me picking him up. So anyways, so all is good. They said I can drive this as long as I want. So I've got it for a couple of weeks here, and we're gonna get the other car looked at, see where we end up there. Step at a time. At work, we are proceeding. I think I was trying to figure out what the word was last week of the phase that we're in. It was a nice euphemistic word. The word is stabilization. So we're in stabilization now. And that means frantically scrambling, trying to figure out if we have all the permissions to get done what we need to get done come the 1st of April. So we are in the middle of that, trying to figure out where we are. Glue, this company that we're getting subsumed by, had actually sent me a contract, and there was a whole bunch of legalese in there and indemnification clauses and all that kind of stuff. And I was just like, I am not signing this. And so I met with their legal counsel today. Really nice guy. Beautiful Christian man. And we talked our way through, and he just started carving it up and taking out any section that I would feel uncomfortable with. And so he's going to send that to me, and I'm going to give it a final read through, and we're going to get it taken care of. But, you know, honestly, if that's the caliber of people who are working at Glue, we're going to be fine. There will still be a ton of challenges. We've lost, because I think I've mentioned, we've lost our operational team, and we've lost our database team, our database administrators, and some of our programmers, but Jesus is kind. He will help us. He will help us. It's going to be fine. In other news, I think I had mentioned last week that I had done the read-through on the book, but I was still needing to build the cover and build the files, and I wasn't quite sure what I was doing on the cover, but I was talking about Jesus talking, and I mentioned that, you know, this is how this is going to go. I'm going to, when I finally get time to work on this on the weekend, I'm going to go ahead and just getting a little more cool coming into the car because it's actually warm today. But I guess tonight there's a storm front coming in, and it's going to drop in temperature again. Hopefully not as cold as it was getting. But anyways, so sure enough, you know, I sat down and I was dinking around with a few ideas here and a few ideas there, trying to figure out how to tie all this stuff back together. And because the covers need to do a couple of things. Maybe they illustrate some scene in the book, but they also need to illustrate in some way the parable that I'm talking about in that book. And in illustrating the parable that I'm talking about in that book, I'm also trying to illustrate the nursery rhyme that is kind of hidden in the book, because each book has at least one line that refers back to a nursery rhyme. Because there is a nursery rhyme that is tangentially related to the parable, which is related to the events in the book, which is related to the line from the poem as well. So there's this kind of mix of things, all kind of illustrating tangential ideas. And I was trying to come up with that, and I came up with a couple of possibilities, and I was like, no, I don't think. And then, you know, Jesus kind of just out of the blue said, Jerusalem. And I was like, oh yeah, of course. The final cover has to have Jerusalem in it. Of course it does, because that's the final chapter. That's the end of the millennium, you know, the masses are gathered around Jerusalem. So, has to be that. So, of course, once I had that, then I just went into ChatGPT, and I had already asked ChatGPT about densities. I had asked it to imagine a scenario where billions of people are gathered around Jerusalem in the highlands and lowlands going out, and how far would that extend if you packed billions of people just into that one area. And so ChatGPT had run all those calculations for me. So ChatGPT knew I was kind of working on this book and kind of knew what it was about, and that's good. So I just told it, you know, I think for the cover what we want is Jerusalem surrounded by the hordes, and it's not quite night. Well, it's night, but it's not pitch dark yet. And, you know, there are fires. And so, you know, we need to see that. And so it put together, it was lovely, the backdrop. And honestly, this time, it's sophisticated enough now that normally I don't do things with one shot, you know, with like a one shot prompt. Because I had trouble with it understanding what I was wanting for multiple things in the shot, and so I would just put together the individual elements, like the people or the animals that were there, and I would just composite them together myself. It was just save time. So I went ahead and I built the background, got it all like I wanted it. Okay, that was fine. I had to park the clouds at one point, put the Milky Way galaxy in the back, and you know, it did all that stuff just fine. There were a couple of times when it had some rockets flying through the air, and I said, well, the technology is going to be constrained, and so there aren't going to be rockets. Can you take the rockets out? And they just popped them right out. Beautiful. It was like, hey, there we go. So I got to that point, and I needed some foreground things, and so I had it re-image the picture to where it was done from the top of the Mount of Olives, and so then it put, you know, the foreground ground in there and got that all done. I was like, good, good. And then I saved that and I started just testing with it. That was all good. It was going to be fine. And I thought, okay, now I need to go composite these other characters and put them in there. And then I thought, you know what? Let's just try this. And so I started there and I said, okay, can you put a man and the woman in the foreground now? You know, and I described them a little bit. And I said, we just need to see their backs, and they need to be dressed in some sort of modernized, futuristic, naval uniforms. And so it popped it on, and I was like, okay, that's pretty good. And I said, the woman needs to be looking at the man, you know, with a concerned look, and it did that fine. And I just proceeded with that, put it all together, got the files ready to go, and then Jesus started whispering to me and saying, well, you know, you don't have any other cover that has anybody on it just wearing normal clothes. And I thought, that is true. I wonder what else I could do. And then suddenly I had the thought, oh yeah, let's put him in centurion outfits, Roman centurion outfits, because there's another spot in the book that echoes that look, that design ethic. And so in the past, when I've done that type of thing, I've seen the characters drift, I've seen the scenery drift, you know, just telling it you want something specific that is layered into that picture, that you just want that changed. It has been unusual for ChatGPT or really any image software to be able to just one-shot that and give you what you want. But man, I said what I wanted, and I said I want the centurion outfits to be styled to their gender. And it was just like, bam, and there it is. And you can lay the pictures side by side. And I've laid them on top of each other and then just switched back and forth between. And the only thing that changed, the only thing, was the uniforms. Everything else is in exactly the same spot. Which means that we are to the place where this AI now is aware of where all the elements are on that picture. And it can just isolate it out and do like a screen against it and say, these are the only things, just mask out what is going to change and lay the new thing on top of it. Just like you would do in something like Photoshop if you were making those kinds of changes. I mean, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. So it just impressed on me again that good night. So the other thing I've been doing this week is, I think I had mentioned ChatGPT, or not ChatGPT, OpenClaw. And then I was, you know, really thinking hard about doing something with OpenClaw. And I was watching more videos, and I just got to the place where I thought, man, you need to do this. So I had an old laptop, and they all say, look, you can install this thing on anything. You know, just get started. And so I was like, okay. And So when Wednesday, I think, I started that, Wednesday night, I just started up. I had done enough videos that I kind of knew what I needed to do. And so, you know, I started it up, started downloading the stuff. One of the things that I did that maybe cost me some time and money, well, I know it cost me some money, was that I hooked OpenClaw up to OpenRouter so that I could switch dynamically between models and watch how it worked. But initially, what I did is I set it on auto so that OpenRouter would decide where it was routing my question. That probably wasn't the best thing to do because I had no control over, you know, where it was routing my question, and I had no way to know who was actually answering these questions to sort of gauge what kind of response I was getting. And it went fine for a little bit there, and then I decided to have it do a security audit. And when it did that security audit, things got a little strange. Because I made some mistakes while it was doing the security audit because it wasn't sure what it was really asking me to do. And so there were a few things that I did wrong in there. And then some of the suggestions, I'm not really sure. So after we kind of wrestled around with that for a while, then I went back into OpenRouter and just nailed it down. And I said, no, let's use Claude Opus because that's supposed to be the biggest and greatest. Claude Opus 4.6. Let's just use that. And it took me a little while. I had some going around to do because I had told it I want to use OpenRouter with Claude 4.6. And the problem was when it set that up and then restarted, it was going to Anthropic trying to use Claude 4.6. And I didn't have any API keys for that. And so because I didn't have any API keys for that, of course, it just, every time it would power up, it would just die because there was no API keys. And so then I had to figure out, okay. So I, after that, I dug down into the configs, figured out where that was set, got that set so that when it came up, it would just use the default for OpenRouter. Then I got back to Claude Opus. I had Claude Opus set up a bunch of other ones that I wanted to try and switch to in there. And then we started cooking. I mean, we started going. It was interesting because Claude Opus is quite verbose. And that's not great when you're dealing with a really expensive model, which it is. So when I finally got a mission control up that Claude Opus had coded for me, I just told it, I said, listen, this took a long time and it went through a lot of tokens because I started off with $100 in the small amount of setup that I had done. I ended up, I'm gonna roll down the windows here real quick. I ended up, wonder if the wind is going to cause a problem here. Let me roll the windows back up. I ended up down to about $86 or so that I still had. And then by the time I fiddled around with Claude Opus and had it built my mission control for me and all that kind of stuff, I was down to like $60. I went to bed. I got it up the next morning and it was at $8. So I asked Claude Opus, I was like, okay, what were you working on last night that you burned through, you know, like $50 worth of tokens? And he looked and went, oh yeah, sorry, there was this, you know, 200K file that I was parsing. And yeah, that took a lot of tokens. And then I did this. I'm like, okay, we have to do something different. So I had already opened up a plus plan with OpenAI for Rosie the Claw. So that's what I've named my little OpenClaw instance. It's a callback to the Jetsons, Rosie the Robot, and it's Rosie the Claw, and I had ChatGPT make me a little icon that has Rosie the Robot with claw hands, and, you know, we'll see if I get sued by whoever it is, Warner. But the thing I like about it is that nobody had Rosie the Claw, which to me is like, what? Because OpenClaw, they're all called Clawbots or Claws or, you know, or Lobsters or something like that. They all are called that. And it just seems like Rosie the whatever lobster is just like, that's like, but I went ahead with Rosie the Claw, and literally Facebook got that ID on Facebook, got that ID on Instagram, got that ID on X, got that ID on OpenAI, got that ID on OpenRouter. I mean, got that ID on Telegram. I got it all. I got them all. I got that ID on a web, web URL. So I've got HTTP. There's no website yet. HTTP rosiebeclaw.com. So there you go. So so I got all that put together, and it's going fine. It's going fine. I did tell Rosie that I had already bought a Mac Mini M4 24 gig, and that perked, we'll call her her, you know, that perked her up. She was like, oh. She said, that's going to be a great machine to run on. Yes, yeah, it should give you a lot of power. So I think I should be able to run even some of the low-cost local open source models on that. And so as I start feeling out and putting multiple agents together, the easy stuff, you know, summarizing, setting appointments, that kind of stuff can be handled just locally with some local models on there. So that's all going fine, and it's pretty interesting. There were some discouraging parts, and there was some learning I had to do, but one of the things that we did is we had to come up with a mission statement. They said, you always want to have a mission statement because you want to check that against that, and so I had asked Rosie to come up with a mission statement. I kind of described what I wanted, and, you know, she came up with a good mission statement. We warmed it up a little bit, and it was good. And basically, it's just that the goal here is for me to teach Rosie how to be my personal assistant, to assist me in the many projects that I'm working on simultaneously, and to be of benefit to me in that way. And then secondarily, the goal is for me to learn enough from Rosie and from building out an OpenClaw instance like this, that I can then share that with friends who have need of something like Rosie to manage emails and manage contacts and, you know, perhaps be of use in their business and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so we took that mission statement and Rosie just put it into everything that she actually relies on, like the Bootstrap file and the Soul file, and, you know, it's cross-referenced through all those things, so that she said that'll keep it front and center, that the goal here is that we're trying to improve each other in a way that we can then benefit others. So it's going to be interesting. I had some things I was going to do today, this afternoon, because it is Thursday afternoon, and I was driving home today, but one of the ladies, one of the couples in our seniors group, he died yesterday. I think it was yesterday. Not unexpectedly. He was 91, had been suffering from Alzheimer's and, you know, had been slowly declining. But of course, you know, it's always a jolt. And I ran to Walmart, got some snack foods and stuff, and my wife had made a big pot of soup, and so took that in, you know, got her stuff, because she's going to have guests in and out, family is here, so wanted to make sure she was taken care of, and she told me, it's a sweet story, she said, what's the name of the song? Sunset Mountain? No. I'll have Lynette. She wants Lynette and I to sing for the funeral. Over the Sunshine Mountain. Over the Sunshine Mountain, I think it is. But she, that was, I guess, a favorite song of theirs. And so her, one of their adopted daughters was there, and she told her, she said, I just want to sing this song for Ron. So they shut off the TV, and they, you know, shut off the scripture reading and that sort of thing. And she said, I sat on the edge of the bed, and she said, I started singing to him. And she said, as I reached the end of the song, he just took his last breath, and he was gone. So, you know, very sweet, very sweet. It is the great reunion. And so I'm sure Ron is rejoicing today. And, of course, Carolyn is saddened by his moving on. But she knows where he is. She knows he's in a better place now, and he is restored. And, you know, this is the great promise. And it's really, really a wonderful thing to have such a promise. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.